In this episode, we're going to have some fun with numbers, starting with a loose calculation of how much time I've spent practicing with horses in my life, and then somehow I move on to balance, connection, and resistance. So here we go, episode 242, Fun with Numbers. Hi, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses will show up for us. So, let's get started. The other day, we had a really rainy afternoon, which was just lovely because we needed the rain. And I was sitting in the living room, and I have this little rain drum outside on our back deck. And we have it positioned so that the rain off this little shade shelter thing comes down off the edge, and it hits the rain drum in just the most beautiful way. So that was just playing these beautiful notes in the background, and the rain is one of those like nice soaking rains that just goes on for a while. And I'm hanging out on the couch, and I just thought, I was kind of playing in my mind with this idea of, you know, the 10,000 hours rule for mastery. And I thought, I wonder if it could be interesting to try to calculate how many hours I've spent learning from horses. So that's what I did. And this idea of the 10,000 hours of deliberate practice was, it's a benchmark, and it was started from a guy, what was his name, Erickson, who did research into the role of deliberate practice. It was in 1993, they did a paper, and they were studying the success of violin students. And so they came up with this 10,000 hours of deliberate practice. And then a lot of people really heard about this through a book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers. Malcolm Gladwell's pretty fun to read. I recommend that book. He also wrote a book called Tipping Point. So I love that book, Tipping Point. And then when he did Outliers, I read that too. Anyway, so he talks about the 10,000 hours rule. And just like most things in life, like, rules don't always apply. And, you know, it's not quantity of hours, but it's quality of hours. And what do they mean by deliberate practice? And I think Erickson was saying, you know, describing deliberate practice where you're there, you're actively working on finding the weaknesses and improving, and you're getting feedback from a teacher. And, you know, there was a pretty good description of it. But I also think, you know, that's not going to be necessarily true for everybody. So there's all different kinds of practice. But obviously, it's not just the quantity of time spent, because we all know there's things that we can do our whole lives and spend a lot of time just doing it and have a lot of fun doing it and never really get any good at it. So I was just kind of playing around, and I thought, well, let me just think about the years that I've spent with horses and about how many hours a week that I thought I spent not just with my horses, because of course, you know, there's the mucking of the stall and the, you know, all the chores, which actually I do believe has a value, because you're still there with horses. And even if you're mucking a stall, you're learning about their, you know, their patterns and the consistency of their manure and their drinking patterns and how much they move in the stall at night. And I think as a horseman, that's all really valuable information. So it's really hard to think about, okay, what are the hours that I was being a horse person and being in the presence of horses and just observing horses? Because we're learning just by observing. We're learning through osmosis, being in circumstances. But, you know, I didn't want to count all of that. And then I didn't want to just count the times that I was actually in a lesson, because I've done plenty of very deliberate practice all by myself in the bushes and, you know, and have made improvements. And there's a whole block of time where, like, I was at horse summer camp and, you know, I was definitely riding and learning and stuff back then, but I didn't count that. So I started counting from when I got my first horse when I was 11 or 12. So that was back in like 1976. You guys can do the math and figure out how old I am. I'm 60. Anyway, so there's a block of time between 1976 and 1987 where I just was a horse owner. I had a horse at home. And I kind of guessed, all right, I spent probably 5 hours a week riding him. And I thought that was a pretty good average. Some days I didn't ride him. Some days I was, you know, out for much longer than that. But I said, you know, 5 hours a week. We'll just guess on that. So 5 hours a week for 11 years is 6,292 hours. And, you know, that's 11 years is a pretty long time. So there were times I did horse shows. I did multiple rides a day. I was, during that period, I was also starting to ride other people's horses. And I sometimes gave lessons. And I'm going to count giving lessons as part of the, you know, in that spirit of learning. Because I know I learn just as much when I teach as when I'm taking a lesson. So I've tried to find like average and the low side of average. I'm not trying to like fluff my hours here. Okay. So then that brought me to when I started more officially working with other people's horses, riding other people's horses, teaching much more. So that was in the kind of 1987 to 1990. So that's 3 years was when I was really kind of going, okay, I seem to be doing this for realsies. So I am taking a wild guess because I can't really remember all of it, but I said, okay, average, low side, let's say 15 hours a week where I'm either, you know, focused riding my horse or teaching or riding somebody else's horse. So again, I think this is low. So I did that for 3 years. That comes out to 2,340 hours. All right. Then there's a block of time between 1990 and 2003 where I was full on. So I was invited to now be a trainer at my trainer's facility, started training other horses there, teaching lessons. I had up to, you know, 8 to 12 horses in training, plus a full lesson schedule, plus some of that time I had my own horse. So that's 13 years. And I put 40 hours a week. I mean, I was at the farm for definitely 12 to 14 hours a day. So anyway, 5 days a week. And then there was extra stuff going on sometimes when I wasn't working at that facility, but I didn't count those. So for 13 years, 40 hours a week, where I was, you know, focused. I was either teaching, training, riding, taking lessons. So that comes out to 27,040 hours. Then there was, I moved to Florida, things changed. I had fewer horses in training. My schedule is kind of different. And so again, it's all a little bit fuzzy. But, and my time was less, you know, everything up to now was like in time spots, boom, 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 1 hour. And then things got a little more loose and free. And I was spending longer, numbers of hours with individual horses. But then on the other hand, sometimes I gave them more breaks. So I was doing more clinic teaching. So, you know, teaching 10 people at a time, does that count for more hours? I don't know. So I rough estimated average and took the low side. So let's say between 2003 and let's say 2015, that's 12 years. I'm going to say 30 hours a week. Still had some horses in training, more clinics and like big blocks of teaching, and then quieter during the week where I mostly worked with my horses. I'm guesstimating. Let's just say that's what it is. 18,720, just for funsies. And then from 2015 to 2025, this is where, in 2015, I kind of was like, all right, that's my last horse that I take in training. I'm not taking other people's horses in training. I'm focusing on my horses. I'm doing more online, you know, online offerings. So I'm in the house more, building the courses, which I still think should count for mastery hours but I didn't count them because trying to take what you know and figure out how to curate it and teach it and writing a book. Like, I feel like I learned so much by going through the process of writing my book, but I didn't even count that. I'm just counting there's a horse in front of me that I can touch hours. So I'm guesstimating again. Let's just say 20 hours a week, again, average, low side. There's for those 10 years, let's say 10,400 hours. So that was sort of a fun little thing to have a little cup of coffee and sit on the couch on a rainy day listening to the rain drum. And then I added all that up. And it comes to 64,792 hours. Whether that fits the bill of deliberate practice for mastery, I don't know. I know I put a heck of a lot of focus into when I'm with my horses. And I think, you know, non-demanding time and just being out with the horses ought to count for something, even though I didn't count it. Anyway, so I don't know. I wonder how many of you guys are all going to sit down and do that same exercise and do it in your own way. Like, it's not to compare your hours to my hours. It's just a really kind of fun little experiment. I had fun doing it, and it was fun kind of reminiscing and remembering my life at different periods and what I was doing and what horses I was riding. Anyway, so I got nothing else to say about that, but it was sort of fun. So then I'm sitting here to do this podcast, and I'm sitting here looking at this number, 64,792, and that's a bunch of numbers. And I thought, what am I going to talk about else on this podcast? And I thought, well, I've done this before where I kind of just randomly pick a number and then open to that page in a book. So I thought, well, let me do that. So we've got this 64,792, and I thought, let's take the first number, 64, and I'll go to my book, The Dressage Naturally, and let's turn to page 64 and see what's there. Okay. And so when I look at page 64, and those of you with the book can follow along with this, it opens to a page about balance. And okay, so let's just story time with Karen now. Here is page 64 of my book. Balance is achieved when the horse's body is positioned in a place where movement can be the most relaxed, efficient, free, and therefore powerful. It's an athletic balance. Imagine a tennis player ready to return a serve. He's balanced, but is not just standing there. It's a dynamic position where he's equally ready to go right or left or forward or back. This is the type of athletic balance we'd like to achieve with our horses. But like that tennis player who may practice 100 backhands in a row and then 100 forehand swings in a row, we must practice some specific balance changes with our horse in order to then be able to find the middle. This kind of athletic balance can be developed naturally by allowing our horses opportunities to challenge themselves. Horses that have access to varied terrain and footings have these opportunities. The less the horse discovers his own balance, the more you'll have to communicate it to him. I'll be writing later in this book about the communication, but you must always look for ways to allow your horse to discover himself. And then it says, see sidebar. So there's a sidebar, which is really, it's actually not on the side. It's just a little grayed out area. So you just have to picture me talking now with a gray background. Anyway, so here's the little sidebar that's not on the side. I had a new student come for a lesson. She brought the horse out online, and within two circles, the horse fell over. I figured it was an isolated, unfortunate slip. She sent the horse out on a circle again, and again, very soon, the horse got impulsive, stumbled, and fell. I asked her if she'd been riding him, and she said, oh yeah, but he needs a lot of help to keep himself balanced. I'm sure he did. In my mind, the last thing that that horse needed was someone, quote-unquote, balancing him. He needed to find a way to take care of himself. So I set up what I call a clutter circle, a sidebar to the sidebar. You can see videos of the clutter circle in the video classroom. Anyway, I densely and randomly scattered miscellaneous safe objects in an arena, traffic cones, plastic barrels, jump poles, etc. If it's on a hill, that's even better. And then I send the horse out online. And the horse is free to pick his route and pick his pace. He's free to stop, slow down, and pick his way through the puzzle any way he likes. So this horse was not looking. He ran out on the line and was sort of shocked when those objects were in his way. He acted like they were coming towards him and he was helpless. He stumbled, tripped, and spooked. And it took a while before he started thinking and taking care of himself. Finally, he mentally, emotionally, and physically collected himself enough to do a lively trot, picking his way confidently through the puzzle. The next day, he did it within 5 minutes. Then the student wrote him and said it was the most balance she had ever felt him. So continually seek ways to allow horses to help themselves. The more we, quote, protect them or hold them up or hold them together, the less they are empowered to do it themselves. Dressage has a lot of information about how we can, quote, help a horse balance. At this beginning level of dressage, it's most important that we realize that sometimes our attempts to help are what's holding them back from ultimately being their best. And maybe some of you listening were thinking, geez, does that horse have like a neurologic problem or, you know, looking at his hooves? And believe me, these were the things that I was looking at. His hooves were good enough that I felt like we could proceed. And that's part of why I wanted to test him out on that circle to see how he was he able to actually do this, or was his proprioception just like that far off and or a neurologic problem. Anyway, so he ended up progressing on just fine. He needed that opportunity to figure things out for himself. So anyway, that is page 64 in the Dressage Naturally book. So the last two numbers of 64,792 is 92. So I thought, let me turn to page 92 of the book and let's see what's there. And on page 92 is where I'm talking, it's part of a section where I'm talking about riding in connection with the reins. So I'm just going to jump in there. So it says, when I'm ready to ride with consistent connection, it's because I've prepared my horse, and my preparation consists of, and then these are cute little bullet points. One is the horse does not brace on any feel I put on the hackamore, bridleless, whatever I'm riding in that doesn't have a bit, while standing still. Bullet point two, I understand how to find the root of brace that I feel while in motion. For example, is the brace coming from impulsiveness or lack of steering, etc. So this means I'm riding, little context, you're riding around freestyle, you're able to ride without a bit, you're able to ride with a loose rein, and now you're preparing to be able to take more connection. And I think, let me just double check. I think here I'm talking about when it's time to start riding with a bit. Yeah. Okay. So bullet point three. The horse accepts wearing a snaffle bit. I can ride him in the hackamore or bitless while he wears the snaffle, and he feels exactly the same as if he wasn't wearing the snaffle. Bullet point four, The horse doesn't brace on any feel I put on the snaffle, whilst, or the bit, we'll just say bit, the bit that your horse finds most comfortable, while standing still. And then the fifth bullet point is, the horse accepts a soft, non-demanding feel on the reins while in motion. Where the rider feels his mouth, but doesn't ask anything of it. In dressage terms, this is called acceptance of the bridle. He doesn't feel the need to escape or brace, yet is able to follow the feel if asked. By accepting the feel of the reins, I mean that the mouth is quiet but movable when there's a pressure on the tongue. When there's pressure, the tongue moves and the mouth can open and lick. A mouth held tightly closed or open, or tongue sucking up or sticking out, head shaking and tossing can all be signs of non-acceptance. Or I would say now, like, not comfortable. If any of these occur, then you haven't, if any of these occur when you haven't even asked for a yield, the horse doesn't yet accept the bit, and you will want to investigate the root of the discomfort. The root of this could be from any one of these or other factors. Bullet point one, could be from ill-fitting or uncomfortable bit. Could be from mistrust of the rider's hands, past or present. Could be imbalance in the body. Could be just a reflex of opposition. They have a reason to brace on something. Could be the neck being asked to go into a position that the body doesn't support. Or it could be pain. Sometimes strange movements in the mouth are displaced behavior and have nothing to do with the bit, as they may show up even when bitless. They could be a result of emotions or sensations in the body, like pain or crookedness or tightness. If that's the case, I want to see them, not hide them. But perhaps this is a good time to discuss another piece of equipment, nosebands. And I'll just leave it there. All right, so that is page 92. So let's see, we've done 64 and we've done 92, but there's a number in the middle of 64,792 that we have not yet talked about, which is the number 7. And so I went and just randomly picked a book off of my little cute little bookshelf that I have in my office that I can see behind my computer screen while I'm sitting right here doing the podcast. And this is one of my favorite books. It's called The War of Art. So not The Art of War, that would be a different book, but this is called The War of Art. And the subtitle is Break Through the Blocks and Win Your Inner Creative Battles. And it's written by Stephen Pressfield. And it's one of these books that, you know, it has sometimes just a paragraph, sometimes a couple paragraphs, maybe a couple to few pages on different subjects. And it's really talking to anybody who's endeavoring to do creative processes. But guess what? That's all of us. It doesn't mean painting or sculpting or writing poetry. It just means living your life. And it really dovetails with the type of teaching that I do, because I embrace so much experimentation and feel and mixing the colors on the palette, right? I use that analogy a lot. So plus I like to do artwork. So I love having this book around, and I often will open it and just see what the random page says. So anyway, so I thought, all right, I'm going to go to the War of Art book and read page number 7, because that's the only number I haven't used yet. All right. And interestingly enough, page 7 is titled Resistance is Invisible. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting how that dovetails maybe with what I was talking about in preparing for riding in connection with the reins with my horse. All right, this is short. It's just a few sentences. It says, resistance cannot be seen, touched, heard, or smelled, but it can be felt. We experience it as an energy field radiating from a work in potential. It's a repelling force. It's negative. Its aim is to shove us away, distract us, and prevent us from doing our work. Interesting. So obviously he's talking about, you know, that resistance we feel if we're sitting down to do a project or work on something, and there's just this feeling that comes in that makes us procrastinate or do it later or not follow through or not sit down and make the time for it. So there's that layer of talking about the resistance. But, you know, we use that term resistance a lot with horses. And, you know, why are horses resisting? You know, that's a big question. If I ever feel resistance from a horse, that's my question, is like, why is the horse shoving me away? Why are they distracting us? Why are they preventing the work from happening? And, you know, with horses, it's often because they're trying to protect themselves. Sometimes they don't understand, but still, that's resistance, is protecting yourself from confusion. It's like, I don't know what you mean. I'm not going there. Right. So I just thought that was an interesting little page 7 to pull up. So thank you for traveling along on this odd podcast episode. Hey, I've got some great news for you. Registration for the Finding the Sweet Spot of Healthy Biomechanics program is now open at a special discounted price. And we only open it twice a year, so if you don't do it now, you're going to have to wait 6 months. That's half a year. Now, this is our most transformative and most highly supported program. It will forever change the way you think about how your horse moves and how you confidently improve it. You get 6 months of live weekly Q&A calls with my coaches and private coaching included. And that's along with lifetime access to all the training materials. Now, the vast majority of students surveyed rated this program a 5 out of 5, and they said that they would confidently and enthusiastically recommend it to their friends. And because of the unique exercises and concepts taught inside the program, it's appropriate for riders of all disciplines wanting to improve how their horse moves, even with no prior dressage experience. And it's also appropriate for even seasoned dressage riders looking for a more harmonious way to ride and train. You can find out all the information at dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot. And check it out now, because registration closes for the semester on October 6th. It's dressagenaturally.net/sweetspot, SWEETSPOT. All right, now back to the pod. Sometimes it's fun and useful to think about things differently, simply for the sake of thinking of things differently. And then sort of following and pulling on any little strings that you find, simply to see what reveals itself. So in creating little games for yourself, the way I just created this little game for myself, and to embrace randomness. We talk a lot about methodicalness and step one, step two, step three, and the progression and training. And yes, we need to be precise at times, for sure. There's a logic to that. But sometimes to embrace randomness, and I think one of the biggest benefits is that, you know, often the best way to gain perspective is to step outside, walk around, and just peek in through a different window. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email, or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse. Move in harmony and enjoy the process.